Yes, we're all just a wee bit Irish today. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. In the book Speak for the Trees, author Diana Beresford Kroger writes, "When we cut down a forest, we only understand a small portion of what we're choosing to destroy." Well, today we're talking with Diana about her book. It explores her Celtic knowledge of trees and efforts to fight climate change. She's the author of a number of other books, a medical biochemist and botanist. And you can join the conversation. What connection do you see between trees and humans? How does a walk in the forest affect your well-being? Well, join in by calling 800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Diana, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. You're very welcome.
And I heard that you are going to give us a little, well, not a lesson, but give us some Celtic. Give us some Celtic.
Yes. Well, what I am going to say to you, ta an gaeling galuafach the gum. I'm going to say to you that what that means is that I am fluent in Gaelic. And now what I'm going to say to you, I'm going to wish you a good St. Patrick's Day. So, the glavra fela fadrig agut. May it be that you have a wonderful St. Patrick's Day to you.
Oh, that's wonderful. And same to you. Same to
Thank you.
You. Do you do anything special on St. Patrick's Day?
Mostly for me, St. Patrick's Day is probably one of the loneliest days of the year.
Ah, why is that?
Because I'm a Gaelic speaker. I'm the last member of a very ancient family in the south of Ireland. I have a pedigree that is about 3,000 years old, and all the listeners can look up the Castle of Ross. That was my family home, and we were all scholars. And I find the meaning of the Celtic world is very different to me than it is to a lot of other people. Like, for instance, the wearing of the green. The idea of the wearing of the green in the New World is putting a shamrock or something like that on your coat. But actually, the wearing of the green is the triad of the shamrock itself, the three-leaved shamrock itself. But that goes back into the ancient world, and it is the triad of the Celtic culture of body, mind, and soul. And it is a meaning to stand up and to be firm, to be strong, and to be free.
Ah, that's beautiful. It makes a whole new meaning to St. Patrick's Day. So thank you for sharing that with us. Diana, I just loved your book. And it's rare that I read a book that I can't put down. And seriously, I had problems doing that. I mean, I had to because I had other things going on. But, you know, your story is so inspirational. And it's kind of complicated. But let's talk a little bit about your childhood. It certainly wasn't easy, was it?
No, it was just absolutely a terrible childhood, really.
No, yeah.
As a younger girl, my mother's family, believe it or not, now you listeners, we have ancient aristocrats in Ireland, the ancient aristocratic families. And the O'Donoghues was one of those families. My mother was Eileen O'Donoghue Aus Gaeilge. It means that she was a Gaelic speaker called Eileen O'Donoghue. And she was a beautiful woman. She happened to marry my father, who was of the English aristocracy. And they are marquises, and they are lords and ladies, and so on and so forth. So, you know, you can imagine. It was a real big mixture for me as a child. But they were killed when I was, you know, when I was 12, 13, around that time. And so what happened to me is that I was orphaned in the south of Ireland. Now, an orphan in the south of Ireland had at that time all kinds of meanings. It meant that I should have been put in the Magdalen Laundry, into a schooling of the Magdalen Laundry, and washed the clothes for the people of the city of Cork in the south of Ireland. And I was brought in front of the judge, and the judge was a terrifying man to me. I still remember the day, and he had his black coat, the black clothes on, and he looked like a phantom to me almost. And he said to me, I have trouble with you, Diana. And I thought, oh, what have I done now? And he said to me, if I put you in the Magdalene laundry. He said, your father's family will come after me. Well, my father's family were all peers in England, in the House of Lords. And now I know now they would have got rid of him. I mean, then I couldn't believe my eyes that somebody was saying something like that to me. He was so big and so black and so fearful. He was a judge. Mm-hmm. But indeed, they were a bunch that would have got rid of him. So what happened to me was very unusual. In Ireland, all of you listeners, listen to this. We had laws in Ireland in the ancient time called Brehon laws, B-R-E-H-O-N, Brehon laws. Now, in Brehon laws, I was taken as a ward of the ancient world, and I was the last child of the O'Donoghue family. And it was in the Valley of Lachines, and 22 people came up to be my tutors, and they were all in their 80s and 90s year old, and I was tutored in Gaelic sometimes, and sometimes in English, and they spoke Latin and Greek. And this was a huge valley of Lachines. And then every single day during the summertime, I was brought and shown all of the pharmacopoeia of the ancient Celtic world, all the cures of the ancient Celtic world. I was taught the concept of telepathy. I was taught all of the old things, the meanings of the laws. Now, for instance, in the old world, in February, a woman, if she was not happy with her husband, could divorce him. Now, that's kind of unique.
Just in February.
Yes. Copyright laws were there. And, you know, you played the bagpipes at the beginning of this, of your program. And in Ireland, they played a similar bagpipe called the Uilleann pipes. But the man who was the musician, the man who made music in the High Court of the king on Ardrí, the king in Tara, the musician, the poet, the writer, the astronomer, wore a bigger number of colors on their dress than the king did, which means that in the eyes of the people, they were more important. That's just one item. So the women had an equal ability to be educated than to the men. So I was told I had to be educated to the ninth degree. I had to be educated because I represented the family and the last of the family. And I was told as a young child, I was told about the trees, the laws of the trees, the alphabet of the trees. And now if you look that up, it's the Ogham alphabet of the trees. It's based on trees. And the word hospital comes from an ospidel, which is a Gaelic word. And that means hospital, of course.
Uh-huh. Wow, I had no idea. And you do talk about that at the end of your book. There's a whole part of it. It's amazing because each letter is named after a tree, correct?
It's named after a tree, and there was a greater protection for trees before the time of Christ than what there is today. And the trees were considered by the druidic physicians, the druidic professors, and they were called Oluna in Gaelic, and they considered that the trees were connected to the heavens, and they connected the earth to the heavens. And now today, you and I both know that the trees actually do take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, they turn it into tree sugars, and oxygen gets blended out into the atmosphere, and 60% of all of our oxygen in the planet comes from the forest. And we know that today, and we also know that if you walk in a forest, if you take your children and you take your friends and walk in an evergreen forest, a pine forest, the pinene compound, alpha and beta pinene, will go into your lymphatic area, will go into your sebaceous glands in your system, and will give you a full protection to cancer for 1 month. And that all the clinical trials were done by King Lee at the Nippon Medical School in Japan. So we're really getting some fantastic results in the scientific world, and they're called cloud chambers, where these aerosols are examined and looked at for what they do in medicine.
It's amazing. It's how much your background, your upbringing has influenced you with what you do today. Talk a little bit about how they intertwine.
Well, they really do, you know, they really, really do. Like today, right today, we have a pandemic, which will be the first pandemic really in our lifetime in the world, and it's COVID-19, and of course that will spin off many variants into it. And that is very stressful for people, whether they take notice of it or not. It is there, it is a reality. And for the elderly in our community and those people who have compromised immune systems, and people who are very largely overweight have a compromised immune system also because of that. They have to feed a larger body, which is no problem for that. But the thing is, we've got the worry of that, and it's like a chronic disease over our heads. And what we don't realize is that we have taken down too much forest. This is what has happened all over the world. And particularly, we will look at California, go down the whole coastline of California, the redwoods, the sequoia dendrons, the sequoia sempervirens were there, and they were like enormous, enormous great valves of moisture against the oceanic currents coming in, and they kept the aquifers filled. And now those trees are coming down. And what people have done is they've put in eucalyptus trees from Australia, and they have a flash point of 48 degrees centigrade, and you reached those temperatures this past summer. And of course, it's a flash point to cause fires. And I tried to talk to the governor of California, and he was supposed to see me, but that appointment was, you know, knocked out. And I really, really do wish to speak to a lot of people in California, and I have done so, to try to keep them safe. So that's number one. And then number two, we've got this problem coming, you know, that is in the world right now. We will have a reduction in wheat, and we can't really afford to have that because our population is growing. And with regards to the general environment around us, if you have got some problems with your lungs right now, go into the organic food store and get an oil of balsam, Populus balsamifera. That is the one. And put a little bit of on your nose. It was like Vicks vapor when people were very young. You put that on, sure, a little tiny bit on your nose. It closes down. It's a vasodepressor on the tissues, the circulatory tissues on your nose, and it reduces your chances of getting COVID. So you can do that. Put on a mask and do all kinds of other things. And then when you're about it, if you really want to protect your kids and your family, go out and buy some fish, go out and buy some salmon, so you have a dilution effect with the protein structure on the COVID. So there are things you can do to protect yourself. They all come from nature, for heaven's sake. They're all out there. And I'm silly enough to have, you know, to have studied all kinds of things. One of my areas is the production of artificial blood. And in artificial blood is when we have tissue transplants, and I'm the person who has done that. And also, the artificial blood makes, you know, your artificial hearts going in and so on and so forth. But that is my area. And basically on that, you have oxidation reduction. And oxidation reduction is similar to what happens in trees. It's the same kind of reaction. It's the same molecular scenery in your body, in your red blood, is in the green of the trees.
It's amazing.
There cannot be a closer connection than that. Your heart is pumping like the tree is functioning.
It's an amazing comparison, and I know you did it, talked about it in your book. And again, it was shocking. We're talking with Diana Beresford Kroger about her new book. Well, it's not new; it's been out for a couple of years, but her latest book, "Speak for the Trees." What questions do you have about the importance of trees or how trees are related to our own health? Join in by calling 800-642-1234. Courtney Everett is our producer today, and Trina LaSouza is our technical director. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. After 11:45 today, we'll talk about the history of the Irish in Milwaukee and the rest of the state. Right now, we are talking about the connection of Celtic wisdom and trees to what's going on today as far as climate change goes. Diana, trees have been really important to you since you were a young girl. Yeah. What draws you to them?
Well, because they haven't been really studied. There is an American study right now on aerosols, and it is an extraordinary study on the cloud chambers, and it's many, many universities have got together with MIT to look at really the first phenomenon of alpha and beta pinene, and it's shocking what we've come up with. It's actually shocking what we don't know. Water is transported in trees uphill. We do not understand how that happens, and it's called transpiration. And if any of your listeners out there have got an answer for it, I have some guesses at it, you're going to get a Nobel Prize. So listen up to this. We have the biggest living creatures on the planet, and they're called trees, and we don't have the foggiest clue how they function. And we haven't realized until just now how important they are to the planet as a whole. They have to be worn on the planet like a fur coat. It protects us against the vapories of the solar system around us, which is a bit of a problem for the world as it goes along. But we don't know. How can that be? How can we have all these universities and all these brilliant people, and Einstein included, for heaven's sake? Einstein came up with the wave theory of light, but he didn't know that the wave theory of light was important on the cuticular area of a leaf. It's fairly simple physics, but he didn't know that. And now we're starting to understand that. And there was an exhibition in Cambridge University in England of my work on the similarity between the tree and your blood system. So I have done lots of studies on the blood system and got a PhD in that, as a matter of fact. God bless us and save us. An Irish woman, imagine. And the tree has got a similar system. Nobody thought of that. Like, hey.
It's amazing. It's like right under our noses, and yet we totally ignore it. I can understand that. Well, tell us about mother trees, because that's a good example of what you're kind of talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I was the first person to publish about mother trees in my book, The Global Forest, and that was in 2010. And the concept of mother trees is very interesting. What we're finding is that trees mother their seeds, and trees protect the little saplings and seedlings, and they protect them with allelochemicals. And allelochemicals are produced into the ground. And we did not know there was a mothering phenomenon happening in trees. We did not know there was an identity. But of course, we should have realized that, because the DNA of a tree is very similar to the human DNA. The only difference between the two of them are two base compounds, BASE, two base compounds in the ladder, in the spiral ladder of DNA. We didn't know that. And actually, we should have known that, because in our own mitochondria, we have DNA which functions within the mitochondria, and the chloroplast has got the same thing. It's got a fragment of DNA in it. So if we were listening and looking and thinking and doing comparative work between the two phenomena, between medicine and trees, we would have come up with that. But the big problem is that we have isolated disciplines within the university systems. And I would love to see Renaissance thinking coming, where a physicist has got to know about biology, a biologist has got to know about poetry. I start every single day of my life with a poem. That is the beginning of my day, is a poem, Pablo Neruda, somebody like that, because poetry extends the mind and the thinking of people and children into the arena and the world of science.
Oh, yes, well said. Imagination is so important to everything that we do and try to accomplish, isn't it?
Yeah, like that was one of the huge things that Einstein said. He said the greatest facility of any scientist is the ability to have imagination. And right now there is a desperate call out there for imagination, for imagining black matter or dark matter. Nobody can quite figure that out. And when we figure that one out, then we'll have the answers to many, many questions within the scientific realm.
Well, one of the things we're trying to figure out right now, of course, is climate change. And you recognized that threat way back in the 60s, well before most other people did. What did you see that others just didn't?
What I saw was really what I saw when I came to the United States of America first and then up into Canada. And I consider myself to be a global citizen, by the way, and then compare it to Ireland, compare it to Europe. I couldn't believe that the giant, fabulous trees of North America were coming down. I couldn't believe my eyes. I couldn't believe my eyes at the variety and the variation of species, of family species of trees, because, of course, I've studied botany and classical botany, and they were all coming down everywhere. I couldn't believe that. And I knew what they held. All the trees hold a reaction which is essential for life, which is called the photosynthetic reaction. And that's the one that tumbles out all the oxygen into the atmosphere. And I thought, they're coming down. What are we going to do to get oxygen? And what are we going to do when there's too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere? Because the tree is a green machine. It takes the carbon out of the atmosphere. It does it for free every day that the sun shines, day after day. The trees do this valuable job for us. Don't people recognize this? And so my concept, and with E.O. Wilson, who was my darling E.O. Wilson friend, and he was, you know, he was a mentor to me all for years and years and years. He died fairly recently. He is the treasure of the United States, as a matter of fact, because he was so good to me. What I came up with was the bioplan, that if every person on the planet planted one tree per person for the next 6 years, we will pull the carbon dioxide teeter out of the atmosphere from the 400s down into the 300s. And that will buy us time to stabilize the atmosphere and give us more time to come up with quantum mechanics for the use of energy all over the world, and it's called entanglement, because we've just found in the universities in Berkeley, they've just found that the photons function the same as electrons. Now, that may mean like nothing to you. It's like apple pie to you. But I'm saying to you, this is a new form of energy, a new form of thinking, and we should go at this gangbusters. Get the trees in the ground, get the one tree per person for the next 6 years. And I've done a film called Call of the Forest, The Forgotten Wisdom of Trees. So get that up out of the internet, Call of the Forest, The Forgotten Wisdom of Trees. And I put an app in at the bottom of it, and it's geo-positioned for a variety of trees for the whole continent, the whole of the continent. And it will give you an idea of medicinal trees that you can use and plant in your garden. So you've got no excuse now. You've got no excuse. And I was told to do that when I was 13 years old by the people in the Valley of Lachines. They said the time of now that we're in will be a very troubled time. And I had to gather all my wisdom and all my knowledge and speak to people now. And I'm doing it. And honestly, Wisconsin, you're facilitating me. I've written all the books. I've written a whole pile of books, and I've written a whole pile of papers. And I'm publishing papers right now on the importance of ancient forests for the medical community, for the law courts. I'm doing that right now, and I go like a son of a gun. So you get the trees in, and I'll tell you, we will have a good future. We will. I will promise you that.
Well, it's lovely to hear such an optimistic view of this, because it certainly can get you down when you start thinking about that. Now, you yourself, you live in Ontario, correct?
Yes.
And you've got this acreage where you've started planting all these trees that are, you know, some of them you have are the only ones in the world, it sounds like. So tell us a little bit about that and how that work is going.
Well, now, I've got 160 acres, and I've got an arboretum of really rare trees. Now, you people in the United States, listen up to this one. because I've got Castanea dentata. I have got the chestnut, your chestnut, and it's a disease-resistant chestnut, and it's been fruiting this year, and guess where those seeds are going? I'll have to have a plant certificate, a phyto certificate, but they're going back into the States. I will replant your forest with these really rare, and I mean, they died out.
Yes,
in the
they did.
States. Mm-hmm. And then I have another one. Oh, my God, I've got a wonderful baby. It is it is Petilia trifoliata crucidifolia. It is the sacred tree of the First Nations. And I was hung from a helicopter. It was on my bucket list. I was hung from a helicopter and I gridded a 200 area, square mile area, and I found it. It took me 4 days hanging off a helicopter. So there was one and I got that, and that's being propagated. Now,
and it was in Texas, of all places. It was Texas.
Oh my God.
What an amazing story.
It was, oh my God, it was, I love Texas. They're all wild down there. They're wild creatures, honestly. And I adore them. They're wonderful people. Then I had the king nut, and I have the last king nuts. And this year, it's a mast year. It means that a lot of trees have been stressed and they produce acorns and they produce nuts. This is the king nut, which is the same as the pecan. And the king nut tree, believe it or not, fed all of eastern Canada and the United States in the ancient times for the Aboriginal people. It is first-class protein, and if the farmers put king nuts around the edges of their fields, we can feed and many more times the population of the world. It is first-class protein. It's good protein. The protein from this nut protects you against dementia, protects you against Parkinson's disease. It is brain repair material called oleic, linoleic, and linolenic acid, which are the essential fatty acids that the body has to have.
And what was the name of that tree again?
That one is called Caria lacinosia, and it is the king nut.
The king nut. So is that available? I mean, a lot of these trees are so rare, it's even hard to find them.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm trying to do. Excuse me. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to save them all. I've got one more to go. I got this bucket list. So what I will do when they're producing a large volume of nuts and a large volume of seeds, I will find takers in the United States, get phyto certificates, and they're going back there. You can send northern tree seeds south, but you cannot send southern trees north because they don't have the solar ability to handle an increase or decrease solar. My garden right now, my research garden, is probably one of the most valuable gardens in the world.
It certainly sounds like it. And you've done a lot of research that will, because of the climate change and what trees and plants may face in the future, you're looking into that too, right?
Yeah. And when I was in Harvard lecturing, I said to the gang down there, you know, I said, will you, for God's sake, look at alpha, beta, and gamma radiation on the effects of that on the soil, because the soil is getting damaged too. So that means that there's a reduction of crops for all farmers' crops on the soils, and you can't push it and push it and push it because the soil will go sterile after a while. So why don't some of you gang look at that? Because it is true. And you got to get out of those armchairs at the university. You got to get out of them. You got to get the kids going. I was doing a big thing yesterday with Trinity University with the students in Dublin, and they're going gangbusters. So wakey-wakey.
That's good to hear. I was kind of surprised when I read that, and I haven't had the privilege of being to Ireland, although it's on my bucket list. I did not realize that there was such a lack of trees there. Explain a little bit about why that is, and is there something now, is there some grassroots efforts to fix that?
Yes, there is. And what happened is, and all of the people in the United States who have Irish blood, and that includes Obama, he's got eighth cousin, I think, who's Irish. What happened is for 500 years, the English were subjugating Ireland, and that's called the colonial system. That's 500 years that the Irish were not allowed schools, they were not allowed their culture, they were not allowed their language. and the Irishian families were sent. They were either murdered, or their children, first children, put on the top of a pike, or they were butchered, or they were burnt in their own houses. And the lot of the families made it to the United States, all right? And there, that they were the Irishian families. They were the top of the top of the top. They were the kings and the queens, the minor kings and queens of all of these families. They were very important people that went to the United States, and Kennedy is an offshoot of one of those families. So what happened is that the Irish, because they had a protection for their forests, and because their language was based, the Ogham script was based on their forest, and their sacred trees were called Anvilla, Villa, meaning a sacred tree. They went and they hid around the sacred trees. They hid in their groves. They hid in Anquil, Killarney, Kilmarnock, Kill in Gaelic means the little forest of. So they hold the names of forests in Ireland. And they cut, the English came and cut down the trees, and they said as long as there was a leaf on a tree, they would get the rebels in Ireland. And they, indeed, they did cut down the trees, except for all the landed estates. The landed estates then turned another page, and they brought in all of the trees all across the world in these walled, huge walled estates. And one of them, of course, is Curramore, was my own father's walled estate. And that was a huge place, and they kept the trees there. And that's why there are no trees there now. Obviously, they were cutting them down before, you know, for the ancient times, but not on the scale that had happened in 500 years. So now what is happening in Ireland is they have found a group up in Galway. They found a really extraordinary thing. What they found were the trees of the Pinus sylvestris. That's the an alm in Gaelic. An alm is the letter A in the Gaelic language. They found the original, by genetic analysis, the original pine trees, and they're around Galway. So that's really, really important. And what they had, their medicine, the ancient medicine of Ireland, was called Antig na Leash, which is the house of perspiration, which is the same as the sweat lodges in North America. And the sweat lodges were there where they sweated the viral infections out of the patients. And the sweat lodges were based on the wood of the sacred forests. And that would be akin to what they do in Norway and Sweden, where they have, you know, the hot houses and they go jump in the lakes. It's the same thing of ridding the body through the glandular tissue of the body of the viral load within the body. And I actually saw that happening, and I actually saw that in effect of 24 hours you'll get rid of the virus. So we really do in medicine really need to go back and examine these old techniques and see what we could do. At the time of Christ, the female physicians, the Aluna, the female physicians could do C-sections on children, on women who were having difficulty giving birth to children. That's very ancient knowledge. Nobody knows about it. Nobody shared it. I mean, they talk about the Irish. They did in that they were superior. They were savages. They were not. They were the most elite people in the world.
It's so much knowledge and so much wisdom that we've lost over the years. You found that there was a lot that was similar when you went to like Canada and North America with the Aboriginal peoples, and all the knowledge that we've lost there too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I would advise people to go and talk to the Aboriginal medicine men and the medicine women. And you know something, I didn't realize that people really understood that so much until one day, and this was about 20, 25 years ago, when I had the garden open, and the medicine men, all the Consol chiefs, came in here into the garden, and they came from everywhere. And I was doing one day talk with them, like a powwow with them. We have very similar cures between the North American and the Celtic world. And, oh, my friends, they were begging me to come along. They were begging me to be part of it. And, of course, this was a private thing, these medicine men and their chiefs. I didn't want them. I wanted, of course, they wanted to come, but I didn't want it to be a cheap circus or anything like that. But I didn't realize people really wanted to talk to them. I'll tell you, it makes you really think when you listen to some of their great wisdoms. It really, really does.
Absolutely. We do have a call from a listener, Louis in Oconto, who has a question for you, Diana. Hi, Louis.
Hello.
Hi there. Hi there.
I have a question and a comment, perhaps. My question is, in Wisconsin, is there any particular variety of trees that you would recommend to do the most benefit? I'm all for planting those six trees. Maybe I'll do them all in 1 year.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're great. Yeah.
I also think that some people, their land is maybe too small for getting six trees for every person in that household. But maybe there's a group or organization that can help out and say, hey, we have some land that trees would be a great addition to it.
We'll find a way. We'll find a way, because I do understand that. I know what you're saying. You know, if you're living on a balcony and you can't do it, but you can help other people, you can go. You're absolutely right. We can have organizations. If we can get the man to the moon, we can do this, for heaven's sake. Anyway, to answer your question, I would say where you are, I personally, my choice in the app, and the app is called callofthefforest.ca, would be for you would be an oak, and for you would be Quercus macrocarpa, the bur oak. And I would advise you to put that in. And why I'm advising you to put it in is that it is a huge carbon sequesterer. It has a huge thirst for carbon, and it'll pull the carbon out of the air. We have the window of opportunity is disappearing for stenching climate change. So right now, I would say, honestly, your six trees should be carbon sequesters, and it should be Quercus macrocarpa, the bur oak. And why I say that also is that if we start to get hungry in the next few years, Quercus macrocarpa is an anti-famine tree. The acorns from that tree can be eaten. They can be cooked on stones. They can be cooked. They're equivalent to your carrots that you would eat, and they're very high in food value. Now, if you don't want to do that, you can go half and half. You can take some of any one of the decent pine trees out there that will grow well for you. So go and have a sniff around and see what pine trees are growing very well, and put one or two pines in. And the pine trees are for the protection of your family, for you, your family, your dogs, and your cats.
Wonderful. Thank you for that call. And we had talked about on our show a while back, but there's an effort called the Trillion Trees Pledge. And we have a chapter of that here in Wisconsin, and it's going through the Department of Natural Resources. So if anyone has interest in it, we're trying to plant 75 million trees in Wisconsin by 2030. So there's some areas right there that you could take a look at. So I appreciate that. And Diana, I hate to say this, but we need to go. And
Oh, no.
I know.
You folks, listen to what she's just said. The Trillion Trees, get going, get your shovel, go plant them, get them in Wisconsin. Hey, let's put Wisconsin ahead of the game.
Absolutely.
For everybody in the United States, go for it. Just
absolutely. Well, Diana, you are an absolute joy, and I hope we can speak with you again and see how this initiative of yours is going, hopefully well.
Well, I would be honored to do that. I really would be truly honored.
Great. Thank you. And we've been talking with Diana Beresford Kroger about her book, Speak for the Trees. Make sure that you check out the links on our website, wisconsinpublicradio.org, WPR.org/Larry. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back to talk about the Irish in Milwaukee.